It's amazing how easily people are drawn to simple answers. Complexity just isn't fun. Maybe complexity offers us less hope, or perhaps it just reminds us of how small and powerless we are on this giant rock. Simplicity is the opposite of all of that. So if a tsunami crashed against the coast of an island 1,000 years ago, it was easy to believe that the gods were angry and punishing them. The truth is a lot more complex. Tectonic plates, earthquakes, seismic waves, and all of that. And therefore, a lot less easy to grasp. Simplicity is sexy. So it should come as no surprise that much of folklore is an engine that runs on the power of simplicity. And no topic represents that more fully than witchcraft. Because for centuries, if anything odd or unexplainable happened in your community, the conclusion was easy to reach. Someone in town was a witch. That's the world that Grace was born into. She was part of the early settlers of Virginia, the daughter of a Scottish carpenter and his English wife. Unlike her parents, though, she was born in the New World. In 1680, Grace married a local farmer, James Sherwood. Her father gave them some land as a wedding gift, and they settled into life there on their small farm. A year later, he passed away and left the rest of his property to them. Nothing extravagant, but 200 acres was still something. The stories say that Grace was unusually beautiful, tall, and full of laughter, the sort of woman who stood out in her Puritan English colony. She turned heads, which probably didn't go a long way toward helping her neighbor ladies like her. Still, life needed living. She and her husband James raised 3 sons there on the farm, but it was hard work. Everything was hard work in the late 1600s, though. It was hard work to stay healthy, to work the land, to fill the bellies of 3 hungry growing boys, and to please everyone else around her. Life was just hard. Grace spread herself thin, too. She had all the normal roles that came with being a wife and a mother, but she also helped out in the community as a midwife. Part of her garden was even devoted to a large number of medicinal herbs, and she used them often to help others with pain and illness. But some people didn't care for that. It smacked of dark magic, of someone who was playing with the natural order of things. And it was not a major leap of logic to assume that she was fluent in spells, too. So when one of her neighbors, a man named Richard Capps, claimed that Grace had killed his bull with one of those spells, they went to court. Thankfully, the evidence was non-existent, so the case was dismissed. Grace and James sued Capps for defamation, but lost. A year later, in 1698, it was John Gisborne's turn. Only this time, it was his pigs and his cotton crop that she had bewitched. That case was also dismissed, and Grace lost another lawsuit for the slander. Later that year, it all repeated once again when Elizabeth Barnes accused Grace of transforming into a black cat that entered her home through the keyhole. Grace somehow lost that slander case as well. Each time it happened, though, she and her husband were forced to pay the court fees, which only seemed to drive them further into poverty. And then, in 1701, James died, leaving her vulnerable to future attacks. 4 years later, it happened again. That was the year her neighbor, Elizabeth Hill, physically attacked her. And maybe it's because of the bruises and scratches on her body, but this time she was able to win her assault case against Hill. She walked away with the equivalent of about $200 in today's currency. But she also ticked off a few people in the process. A few months later, Elizabeth Hill returned, blaming her recent miscarriage on Grace, and the women went to court. By March of 1706, 2 separate juries were called to serve in the trial. One was sent to Grace's home to search for evidence of her witchcraft, while the other was tasked with examining Grace's body for witch's marks. On March 7th, Grace was stripped naked by 12 local women, who examined her from head to toe, looking for dark spots or raised parts of her skin. You know, things that we might call moles or skin tags or freckles. And surprise, surprise, they found some. Oh, and the woman in charge of this gang of angry mole hunters none other than Elizabeth Barnes, the woman who failed to get Grace arrested 8 years earlier. Someone was holding a grudge, I think. Now, I won't bore you with the court details. There were more trials. There was a bit of controversy and a clear lack of solid evidence. And yet, the judge felt that something had to be done. And so on July 10th, Grace Sherwood was taken to a plantation at the mouth of the Lynnhaven River. A crowd gathered to watch that day, as Grace was stripped naked and examined again by the group of women. This time, though, they weren't looking for witches' marks. They were looking for tools that Grace might have hidden on her body, because they were about to do something insane. They pushed her into a boat with the sheriff, and he rowed it about 200 yards out into the water. Then, after her hands and feet were bound to each other, and a 13-pound Bible was tethered to her neck, she was brought to the side of the boat. Their logic was about as solid as a cloud and should sound insanely familiar to fans of Monty Python. If she floated, she was a witch. Drowning was the only acceptable proof of her innocence. Grace Sherwood plunged into the dark waters of the Lynnhaven River around 10 a.m. on the morning of July 10, 1706. And like so many women before her, this was the end. The delicate balance of life and death hinged on the crazy notion that witches were so immune to Christian baptism that they actually floated. And so, with a firm shove, into the river she went. But Grace was stronger than the fear that filled her community there in Virginia. As her body sunk into the depths of the river, as the shock of the cold water on her naked skin and the burn of her lungs overwhelmed her, she fought back. She managed to untie herself and shrugged off the weight of that enormous Bible. And then she swam free. It was a sign of her guilt, though, so she was thrown in jail the very same day. She beat part of the system, only to fall prey to the rest of it. It's twisted and wrong, I know. But to the people of her community, it was simple logic. And simple, as we've seen, is a lot easier to believe. Grace appears again, roughly 8 years later. That's when most historians think she was released from jail. She reclaimed her property, paid her back taxes, and then settled into life alone. Her boys had grown up and moved on, and it seems that the accusations were gone as well. The rest of her life was relatively quiet, and I have to imagine she was glad for that. She passed away in 1740, at the ripe old age of 80. I like Grace. She managed to do something that few others in her era had. She faced a test designed to punish the innocent, and she got away. Yes, our world is still full of dangerously irrational people. People that allow hate and jealousy and their own deeply held insecurities to drive them toward monstrous actions. But maybe that's not the inescapable prison it appears to be. Maybe, like Grace Sherwood, we can rise above it all and swim to safety. One can only hope.